Welcome back, nerds and nerdettes, to another edition of The Way We Nerd. I am Hodor. Across from me is...
Hodor.
Sitting next to him.
Hodor.
And across from him...
Hodor.
Ah, excellent. We have a few things to talk about. One of them is Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Obviously.
Spoiler alert.
Big Wait. Time spoilers.
Why were you guys telling me to say Hodor? What does that mean?
Well, we found out this weekend.
Yay! Yes.
Oh, you mean that, that show.
Spoiler.
Do we want to go right into that or save
If you're
that?
Still listening and you get pissed off at us, I don't care. Fault. Because we said spoilers like 600 times.
Yeah, if you get pissed off at us, hold the door.
Yeah.
Oh. The door.
Way to slip that in there.
Whole door for the lady.
I didn't even know. You know, I almost ruined it for our friend today. I didn't even know Dave watched it. Because we were doing our exercises this morning, and we do this thing called wall sits. And Josh was leaning up against the door.
Because they're buff bros.
And he was wall sitting. No, we're trying to become buff bros. Josh was sitting up against the door doing the wall sit. And I look at him. I'm like, hold the door. And Josh didn't react. And I think the reason he didn't was because he didn't want me to spoil it for Dave.
I think I didn't hear you.
Oh, you didn't? I thought you did because you were looking at me. But anyway.
You
were bawling. You were bawling ferociously.
It was awesome because Josh is probably the closest to like Hordor's height as anybody
in the show. Because I'm adorable?
Yes. And you're very adorable.
That
like a horse.
I could see him carrying around Potter the way he carries Hodor carries around Bran.
Yeah.
Can we try that directly after this pod?
That'd be a great costume.
Could try it during the pod.
Okay.
you hear Josh huffing and puffing. That's why.
Anywho.
Anyway, let's move on to the actual show.
I think that was one of my favorite episodes ever.
Yes.
Of TV or just that of show?
That show, definitely top three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't want to like... I found out it was directed by Jack Bender, which is awesome because he did the best episodes of Lost.
Yeah, so he did The Constant.
Yeah.
He did a couple of the finales and premieres.
Yeah.
And when I was watching it, I was, from 5 minutes in, I wanted to like tweet out, like, do I get a prize for being the 10 millionth person on the internet to say, like, how impressed with the show I am? But I was like, no, hold on. I already knew something big was coming. I just didn't know how big. That was so good.
Like, the thing is, and we'll get back to this, but I mean, the end of that episode's the best. This episode would have been enough if they had just shown us that flashback about the White Walkers.
Yeah.
But to give us that ending, so perfectly crafted, showing then and now together and sort of the origin of Hodor and the fall of Hodor and his destiny being written and fulfilled in the exact same moment across 40 years, 50 years, I don't even know how.
Ish, sure, yeah. Yeah, it's like a double gut punch because it hits you that, oh man, this guy who is kind, wouldn't hurt a fly, afraid to fight, afraid to pick up a weapon unless Bran is warging into him. You know, all of a sudden he is sacrificing himself so that they can get away. Then you realize that it's pretty much all Bran's fault, too, at the same time. And it's like, ah, man, to see that on Hodor's face, see that on Bran's face, and then the episode ends, and you're just like, you son of a bitch.
So technical question, when he's young Hodor, and he... Mm-hmm.
When he's Willis.
Yeah, when he's Willis, and he's spazzing out there, is he seeing... What's happening to him there at the end? Because that's extra dramatic irony. If your whole life you're like, I have this freaky ass vision, and I haven't been able to speak since, and all of a sudden like you find yourself in those circumstances, but you're so he's so chill about it when he's in the tree and shit.
Right. Yeah. I don't think he was green seeing, which is apparently what they call it when you grab onto the tree and like see through time.
Oh. Okay.
I don't. It didn't seem like he was. I mean, maybe he was remembering it at the same time and like, oh, shit, this is why that happened. I don't know, but I don't think he was there. Because it seems like it's been established that when you are doing that, walking through time, your physical body is at least visibly present. You know, and like the dude, the three-eyed raven, the second he was killed, he... disappeared in that plume of weird
right which smoky, was also awesome
the lost smoke monster
thing. Yep.
So I don't think he saw it,
man. It was sad.
it was.
Cried. I'm not gonna lie,
Dan, are you totally crying right now? What's happening?
Oh no, sorry, my mind is elsewhere.
on the burrito?
No.
Dan has a burrito, everybody. He's holding out on you.
Be jealous. Be supremely jealous.
I thought it was supposed to be an enchilada, but maybe it is a burrito. Anyway.
What's the difference, really?
That's racist.
No, it's not.
I know it's not. I'm
burrito racist?
It's tortilla.
I didn't say Mexican like and Cuban. What's the difference?
Enchilada racist?
That would be racist.
I got nothing.
So Hodor.
Hodor.
Yeah, Dan. Sorry. Hodor. I kind of zoned out a little bit there, I won't lie. But you said something there.
Were you green seeing?
Well,
maybe.
I think you were, yeah.
The thing is, he was grabbing my ankle under the table to green see.
Nowadays you roll a blunt to green see.
I was just wondering, and maybe you guys mentioned this in the beginning, this is why I didn't say anything, because I only got the tail end there. Is it Bran controlling him when he's holding the door?
Yeah.
I don't think his eyes are...
that takes a sacrifice.
I don't think his eyes are whited out.
He is at first.
Yeah, when it's
wakes him up.
Yeah, he wakes
him
up.
Because I'm trying to remember when Bran does... Because every time Bran takes control of him, you know, the Hoarder, you know, feels a little like that fucked up that you just did that. Like, he always gives him that look like, you know, yeah, I'm
Hodor.
Still... Yeah, exactly. I'm still your friend and I'm still in, but...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, no problem.
The wonderful janitorial staff here at Warner Brothers, they always do their job really well.
Yes, they do.
I'm trying to remember in past episodes if do his eyes stay glazed over like that the entire time he's under control?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so
that is part of it.
It was only because they only went over for a second and then he got up. But why?
Yeah, it was knocking him out, knocking him into action. He was sort of
because he said we need Hodor.
He was there like Dustin Hoffman and Rain Man, just sort of sitting in the corner,
and
Walker, 15 minutes. Walker.
He needed Bran to kind of wake him up.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, cool. Because I kept thinking about that, and I was like, I hope that's not what happened there, because that's kind of jacked up for Bran to do that.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Because he's also, the whole time he's at the door, he's sort of talking to himself.
Did you guys?
Which he wouldn't do. Like, Bran wouldn't be talking to Hodor's self.
Yeah.
Correct.
So at the after the episode aired last night, like right when it ended, the actor that plays Bran tweeted out, "Nice one, Bran." It's amazing.
That's awesome.
But it's such a... I mean, you can't fault him at all because he doesn't even realize the implications of what's happening until he puts it together in that moment, and he kind of releases them at the same time, and then it's a little bit of too little too late. And, I mean, that show's all about sacrificing for the important people or whatever, and if you're going to be the new Three-Eyed Raven, I hate to say it, but you're a little bit more important than Hodor. But Hodor is the only pure character, pure of heart character in the whole Yahtzee.
Him and Samwell Tarly, or whatever. Sam Tarly?
Yeah, but Sam Tarly had sex.
True.
He is unclean.
True. Yeah.
He broke his vow. That's, Sam did.
That's fair.
And he has He has motive.
I'm not saying I'd take
some. His motives are mostly pure, but he's still, like, I could still see him doing something morally compromising for... What's her face, or for Jon Snow, or for the right reasons, but it would still be like a bad thing.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Whereas Hodor is basically one of the dire wolves, except he's
he's simple.
Right.
Hodor is.
Yeah.
Hodor doesn't have intention. Like, he just he has instinct.
Yes.
Well, I'll say this, being a dire wolf is akin to wearing a fucking red shirt in the Stark family.
Hey, that is some expensive CG.
They
are dire wolves.
Killing they make it a regular wolf. Don't make it CG.
Well, for the love of God, that's one thing I'm impressed
with. Stop killing dire wolves.
Impressed with every week is like last night, and even in the scene where it was just Tyrion talking to the new witch, which I guess we'll talk about now. Like, I'm looking at that scene, just thinking about the composition of the shot, the expense of the set, the expense of the costumes, like. That's the John Hammond of television. They spare no expense.
Yes.
That's fair.
It's insane.
And in exchange, they got to kill a wolf here and there.
Yeah.
It's the price of doing business.
I could, you know, I just realized why we lost Hodor. Like, it's such a story satisfying reason. Mm-hmm. But the producers are sitting down, they're like, well, we're going to spend a lot on the White Walkers. How much is Hodor's contract? All he says is Hodor.
we can get an extra to say Hodor for $150 a day.
All right, let's make it really satisfying, but let's tell the writers they have to axe Hodor.
Yeah. I liked the White Walker link, too. The story link with the Children of the Forest.
Let's explore that.
Yes.
Kyle.
Yes.
Do you want to tell me what that means?
So, from my understanding, and this is from watching the show, and then I would recommend watching, there's an after show.
Oh, right.
Yes. Called After the Thrones, which is Chris Ryan and Andy Greenwald from The Ringer. They have on also Mallory Rubin and Jason Concepcion, who are like experts on the show. So this is where when it's something that I seem to know that like how the fuck do you know that? It's generally from like them. Or listening to the podcast with them. But when Bran was green seeing, he went back, you know, probably tens of thousands of years maybe.
Yeah.
Definitely thousands of years.
Right.
To see the children, I don't know if they're the Children of the Forest, I don't remember exactly what they're called, but the tree people.
Ferngully chicks.
Yeah, the Ferngully chicks. We find out in this episode, they created the White Walkers.
Yeah.
And the White Walkers they created because humans had come over on a land bridge from Essos and figured out, rightly so, that the weirwood trees allowed the tree people, the children of the tree, whatever they're called. I'm going to say that every time. I'm going to call them five things. They'll all be different. They could use those trees to spy on the humans and learn their secrets and their plans and all of that. So once the humans figured that out, they started cutting down the weirwood trees.
Oh.
And so the kids in the forest created the White Walkers as a weapon to use against the humans, turning the humans and their dead against themselves.
Right.
In this case, by turning a human into a White Walker who then has the ability to create other White Walkers and create the Whites, which are the zombie, the dead.
So maybe this is what we don't know. Because I inferred that much because she was like, this is, we made them to stop you. I didn't know the stuff about like tree surveillance and all that.
Right.
But like, how. Oof. Who was that dude? Was it just a random dude? Do we not know?
I have no idea. And I haven't heard anybody speculate even.
And how does putting a sharp thing into his chest turn him into a White Walker?
Well, so that was... Short answer, I don't know. Okay. Long answer, it seems like that's... it was Dragonglass.
Ooh.
Which is one of their weaknesses. Their three weaknesses are Dragonglass, fire, and I don't know if the White Walkers themselves are... susceptible to fire, or if it's just the whites, the rank and file zombies.
And the third one,
and
is
then Valyrian steel.
Oh, Valyrian steel.
Valyrian steel. Yeah, and there's only like four or five pieces of Valyrian steel out there.
Yeah.
But the dragon glass, because remember when Sam killed a White Walker?
Right. It was
had the dragon glass.
Yeah.
And when Jon killed one, he had the Valyrian steel.
Yes. Correct. Yes, and so. I don't know that I knew that Mira's spear had one or the other on its tip, but it apparently did.
It must have. Yeah. Which would make sense. Like, why wouldn't they have protection beyond the wall?
Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense.
And maybe it wasn't her spear. Maybe it was one of the kids of the forest and she picked it up and threw it. I don't know. It was unclear to me.
Yeah.
Because I know she grabbed her sword earlier.
Right.
So I don't know.
Right.
There's a lot of shit going on in these
episodes. There is a lot.
Yeah, they're moving at high speeds now that they're not bound to the books.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're still getting story input from
George R. R. Martin.
I don't think as much, though, because there hasn't been as many background orgies for no reason.
That's
exposition
true.
Orgies.
Less exposition.
That's fair. That's fair.
I totally ship Brienne and Tormund, though.
Oh, yeah. That'd be fantastic. Yeah.
Like, I could not stop laughing when she mentioned Tormund.
Yeah, she was
talking to Sansa.
We actually rewound that scene where he looks at her three times.
Yeah. So,
it's so funny.
It's a very great moment because the look on his face, he's just like, he really is into her. Like, yeah. That is the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
Yeah, and, smile on his face.
And she looks away in disgust in a way, but you know she likes it. Because she had that line earlier in the show where she says that people always think that she's one thing. Right. But she is a girl at heart, and she likes men. And I don't know if she said that exact line, but she implied that's what, you know, she's straight.
People make assumptions.
Exactly. Yeah. People make assumptions the way she looks, and that's unfair, you know. And not that she was a lesbian, but they're just trying to say, hey, you should never make assumptions about anything.
I ship them so hard. Yeah.
But yes, I like that. That was a great moment, and the show needs more moments like that of levity, not just to come from Tyrion, you know.
Well, there's another great moment of pseudo levity for a while when we watched the play that basically recapped the series.
That was pretty fun. Yeah.
There were things about season one that I had forgotten that they covered in that play.
Yeah.
Like that the official story is that Ned tried to steal the throne because he's a greedy bastard and just wants the throne.
Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to all the shit that was actually going on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. All the cover up and
Yeah. The intrigue and cabal.
Uh-huh.
Cabal,
good word choice. Thank Very you. Nice. Thank Very you. Nice.
Cabal of Thrones.
Yes.
There you go. Cabal of Thrones.
So I'm trying to think what else we got. We saw Littlefinger again.
Yeah.
He and Sansa had their detente.
Pwned.
He did.
Yep. Yep. Which was cool. Like, did, Sansa plays the game now. Which is great. The Game of Thrones.
But he's still got something cooking. That dude always got something.
There was a new sex witch.
Yes.
Sex witch.
Yeah.
A new Melisandre.
Yeah. Oh, that girl that Tyrion.
Oh, the Red Priestess.
Yes. Or just part of that order. I don't know that. I mean, Melisandre is necessarily done.
So that's the interesting thing to me. And I don't know that this had gone through my head before, but there's been this thing in the background, this story that the Red Priestesses believe, or the Lord of Light followers, about the prince who was promised.
Right.
Who will rise from fire or whatever.
Right.
And Melisandre believes that that's Jon Snow. Now, she used to think that it was
Stannis,
but you know, now that he's been, you know, murder killed by Brienne.
Yeah.
Yay.
Not so
she
much.
Thinks that's Jon Snow. And there's an argument to be made there. He was brought back from the dead.
Right.
Yeah.
And then this other Red Priestess believes it's the Khaleesi, who was reborn in fire. She never died, but she came back to life.
Right.
You know, by
twice, essentially.
Yes. Basically, yeah. She just didn't fucking die in a fire, really, and I came back to life.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I don't have anywhere to go. Not going anywhere.
Yeah, it was like, it looked like you're about to tie something together.
No, I don't. Like, I mean, it's just both of them can't be the prince who was promised.
Sometimes Kyle just likes to talk.
But no,
we just let him.
To go bigger picture here, something I liked about last night's episode that lost it constantly, and why it lost is my forever love, is it because you had the contents of the episode itself, but it was always about something more. That the conversation that they had about faith was super compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was freaky for, I always forget his name, the eunuch.
Oh, Varys.
Yeah,
Varys.
To be like, I don't believe your shit because you're full of shit. And she was like, should I tell you what you heard screamed from the fire when they threw your balls in it? And he's like, but at the same time, their religion or whatever you want to call it is fundamentally flawed, or their interpretation at least, because she was wrong about Stannis, and because they have monster demon babies.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're in the right religion, you don't give birth to fire demon babies.
That's fair.
Yeah. I got nothing on that one. That's interesting. I like that Euron Greyjoy finally made his play for power.
Yes.
That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I wonder where Theon and his sister are headed.
Yeah.
I thought that my assumption was, and I will probably be wrong because I'm not the expert on the show, but I thought they were going to try and get to Khaleesi before he did.
They might. That was an interesting thing, his whole, like,
it was a good idea.
Look, yeah. I'm gonna marry the Khaleesi, and then we're gonna take over the world. And hey, you guys were with me at the beginning, so let's do this.
Good plan.
Yeah.
Kind of a jerk, but good plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now let me go kill my niece and nephew.
Which is why I thought they wanted to beat him there. because they either want to warn her or be like, that is a good idea, but he shouldn't be the one to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the Iron Islands caucus didn't seem to be super well attended or well run.
Yeah.
It's just sort of, I'm giving a speech and then everybody runs away.
they're like, what's his face and what's her face? Or like the Hillary too. What's his face is Bernie. That made sense, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
Right down to just killing the person who lost.
But, I mean, what a beautiful episode of television, top to bottom.
Yeah.
Compelling.
Yeah.
I will miss it.
Yeah, the Hodor thing will stick with me for a while.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're all going to need shirts, I think.
Well, that's, I laid it down on the internet. I was like 10 million points to the first two, whoever can show up to work by Tuesday in a Hold the Door t-shirt.
Right.
Somebody out there wants 10 million points.
Points. So, I mean, that's gotta, the point we're getting to now on the show, and the question I have, and there's nobody who can answer this at this point, except George R. R. Martin, is like,
if he even came,
is all this the plan? Like, is Hodor from the beginning Hold the Door?
Right.
Or is that something that they came up with?
Well, he's in a fascinating conundrum now, because that book's going to come out, whether it's 2 weeks from now or 2 years from now.
Probably 2 years.
2 years.
Yep.
And people are going to read it, and they're going to go, I like this show better. Like, the show's, to me, the show's going to win.
I've read four of the books, and I like the show way better.
But I'm just saying, like, he's not working in conjunction with this product. He's now working against it. Yeah. Because if Hold the Door wasn't his intended idea the whole time, now whatever he wrote in chapter whatever of the latest book, when people reacted to last night's episode, he's got to go, oh, fuck. Sorry, that's...
Well,
seems kind of Georgie.
Well, yeah. His name is George.
Yeah.
According to the little blurb after the show, where they just have a quick little recap with... some of the creators and everything.
Oh, yeah.
They apparently met with him in a hotel, which just sounds awful. Hotel lobby, probably a bar, restaurant, whatever. Let's clarify. And he told them where he was going with that. So they're still getting everything they can from him.
That's what I'm thinking.
But a lot of it is going to be their own stuff. And he's just like, yeah, that's cool. He's going to have to sign off on it because they're going to move ahead with it anyway.
I don't think they're necessarily consulting him as much as they were in the past. But I think that as far as some major story points, I think they've had to be able to agree on that. Because it's different when you, like there was a character in the books called Jane Poole, and they gave her story to Sansa. But it makes sense in this. Like, you don't need Jane Poole. You know, and they've changed, you know, Davos' story a little bit. There's little things that they've changed to the story, but they've never done anything extremely major. Like, something like Hodor, Hold the Door. I mean, what else could it be? Like, that's so perfect.
Yeah, right.
If it's anything else.
That's exactly what I'm saying. But it could be 10 million things.
It could be. It's but
maybe it means hold on some more.
But I think I'm not saying it was necessarily that phrase, but I mean, I think it had something to do with Bran doing what he does.
With the green saying.
Yeah. I think overall, like the major part of that it was probably something that they are going to do together at the same. The book will probably have something very similar to that, if not exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're going to deviate on other parts of the story.
I was just kind
of... Like, I think in the books, Theon still has a dick. So, you know, that was kind of a major one. But at the same time, it's just part of his torture.
Huh. Yeah.
Watching last night's episode, I had this big picture thought, which was like, I love so many of these characters, but it's kind of... I mean, it's like musical chairs. Only one of them has got to be able to sit down at the end of the day.
It's going
to
be Tyrion and Dany.
And at that end of the day... Is everyone else dead, or is there some truces? Like, I got preemptively sad about the end of this show,
which shows
how good
it is. I'm thinking to myself that. I was like, are all the Starks going to die, or are they all going to survive as they are now?
I mean, the Starks at this point don't want anything more than just the North back.
They just want what is theirs, rightfully theirs.
There's no reason Dany can't become queen and the Starks keep the North. I mean, the Starks have no love for the... Lannisters at this point.
No.
Right.
Like, there's a path to a quote-unquote happy ending on this show where the characters we love stay alive and all that. Where, you know, the White Walkers are attacking and the whole kingdom's banded together and they're about to lose. And then Dany swoops in with her dragons. Everybody loves her and says, hey, fuck you, Lannisters. And she becomes queen.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying I even want that to happen. But, like, there's a path.
I've gotten so used to this show's brutality, though, that if that was the ending, I wouldn't be totally happy because it wouldn't feel like there was sacrifice in it.
Right.
Like, same if that's the ending, then, like, it would gut me, but I have to see Jon Snow really die in that battle or something. You know?
Right. Yeah.
None of the Starks can die off screen. They have to have,
obvious,
brutal deaths right in front of you. Right. Because they established that right away. With every single Stark has died very violently in front of everybody.
Yeah. Where do you guys see Arya going? Because I think we all agree that her story has gotten kind of, and we just want it to come quicker resolution. Well, it's or
the same problem they had. The same problem people have had with Daenerys' story. It's always the same thing. It's like, okay, she goes into a town, she destroys all their leadership, and then takes over the fucking city. She did it again with the Dothraki. I mean, it's the same. And I don't say I'm disliking the way she's doing it, but it's the same story over and over again. And you're right, Arya's is getting kind of repetitive too. Like, it's like, how many times can she?
Last night was better because that stick fight was really cool. But it
was stick fight was good. And the Bravo Sea Theater, was awesome.
That was cool, and it brought up the question in my mind too.
I think you're getting there.
Is she really going to be a servant of the many faced god, or is she going to retain her identity as Arya Stark? And go back to the north
See her not being a long-term one. I see her doing it for, like, a day, and then they're like, kill this person. She's like, I don't know. But then she's got all these awesome, like, ninja skills and leave and go do what she wants.
But that's the thing. I think eventually, if all the Starks that are out there right now survive, they're eventually going to join up together, whether they or not they survive the final whatever push. But I think eventually, maybe even the last season, they're all going to be... one.
I think she'll be kept away the longest.
Me against the world.
I think it'll be like they assume that she's long gone and she's got to pop up and do some ninja shit. And they'll be like, what the fuck was that? And she'll be like, it's me.
Yeah.
Like, kill Jon Snow.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, she's got to get a mission that she doesn't.
That'd be really cool, by the way.
Yeah.
But I mean,
nobody really knows he died, right? Like, it's like. The people within the Castle Black and the Wildlings know, but...
I don't know.
I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and I don't remember the exact phrase, but there was essentially somebody... the dude, Jokin?
Jokin Noah?
No.
From the Chicago Bulls?
No. The dude who's training her.
Oh, whatever.
Jokin. I don't know how you pronounce his name. He essentially said to her, like, you're full of shit.
Right.
I don't remember the exact phrase he used, but he's like, is a girl ready? And she's like, a girl is ready. And he's like, you're full of shit, but here you go. Here's a mission anyway.
He's like, we'll give you one more chance. But the intriguing thing was he was like, one way or another.
A face is being added to the wall.
Right.
Yeah.
To the vault or whatever.
And there won't be a third face. So does that mean that it's going to be her face, Arya's face, if she doesn't succeed? Is it always going to be the... Yeah, that's what I got from it.
If she succeeds, then the person who she killed, their face will join.
If not, there's
only one really interesting thing that we didn't hit yet, and that was how wrenching and kind of satisfying the scene where Grayscale told Daenerys that he always loved her. Jorah friendzone, yeah. That's why I like that scene so much. And she was basically like, no, wait. You go find a cure to the friend zone, and then we can talk again. I'm not banishing you, I'm just saying, if you can find a cure to the friend zone, we might be able to work something out.
Probably won't be able to, but if you come back,
right.
Maybe then we'll discuss.
Yeah.
I don't have to talk about it now.
He's all like, I gotta go, look. She's like, why? He's like, look, I have the friend zone.
It's on my arm.
Growing. Once it starts, it's almost impossible to turn back.
It's like the dark side.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anywho, yeah, there are other things.
This has become a game. Game of Thrones pod, which is nothing.
Such
wrong
a good episode.
No, I actually called this. I said we were going to do 30 minutes on it, and I had no problem.
Yeah, it was
doing
a worth.
That.
Yeah. Well, that's our meat. Let's have our potatoes.
Yeah. And our potatoes. Too.
But I want dessert.
Oh.
We'll get there.
So the other one of the other big pieces of news this week is, they brought up the new Star Trek trailer and revealed the poster, which. Josh Moorhead and Kyle and I all thought was fan art when we saw it. And that's not a negative thing, because if it was a piece of fan art, it was a beautiful piece of fan art. But
if it's fan art, it's reference. Cool. If it's,
no, it's official. Well, I read that's it.
But if it's the official poster, then it's just fart.
Okay, so Josh is, let me explain what the poster looks like before we get into the trailer, because the trailer's kind of fun.
That was funny.
And there was an article article on Slash. I don't know if you read the whole thing on it. Got me really excited about this new Star Trek. But anyway, so the poster is very, very reminiscent. Actually, it looks almost exactly like it. Not even reminiscent. It looks exactly like Star Trek, the motion picture.
Yeah,
poster.
The first movie. Yeah.
Now, that being said, that poster is probably the coolest thing about that particular movie. That movie has some pretty visuals and some great music.
An awesome ship porn.
And some fun banter between Kirk Spock and Bones very, very early, but it's only like 10 minutes and it's done. That movie's terrible, but that poster was beautiful, and it was kind of the rainbow colored like beam in the background.
You had the
alien girl's face and then Kirk and Spock, and that's exactly what they have in the new poster.
The warp streaks. That's essentially what it is, the rainbow warp streaks.
So, what we're hoping is, and Kyle said this earlier, he's like, I hope to God that this isn't, I think it was you, maybe it wasn't you, maybe it was an article I was reading, he's like, I hope this isn't telling of what the movie's going to be, where the poster's amazing and the movie is absolute garbage, like that original movie.
Well, the new trailer definitely showed imagery that made me excited about it. I mean, I was going to go see the movie no matter what, but the thing is, when this reiteration of the series started, it was like in a what's going on out there sci-fi world, and we are now officially back in a Star Wars culture.
Yeah,
and that's the test here: is does Star Trek still have a place, or does it go back to 90s Star Trek new movies where it's like Star Trek Nemesis made like $50 million total at the box office? That's not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it go back to being niche, or is it?
Well, I love that you said that, because especially the thing about the Star Wars world, because one of the things that came up in the article I was reading on Slash was about they visited the set a few months ago, or obviously when they were shooting. And they interviewed everybody. And one thing Simon Pegg was talking about was the fact, like he said, there's 50 new aliens in this movie, or 50 alien species. I think they said new to represent the 50 years of Star Trek.
Wow.
So now, obviously, we're not going to talk to each one. They're just mostly going to be background characters. But a lot of them were practical. A lot of them were puppeteers, puppets.
Great.
But he was, and then they asked him that question: is this the Mos Eisley Cantina? And he's like, "No, no, no. That was a place of scum and villainy. No, no. This is going to be kind of a meeting point of worlds that just joined the Federation, and it's kind of like, New York, Ellis Island would be kind of the equivalent here.
Yeah.
So it's just that kind of meeting point where you get to find out what this whole new place is all about. This Federation of planets we've just become a part
of. Something that trailer did against the argument I just made was that it showed me, at least that trailer's like, no, this is our space. Like, this is the area we occupy.
Yeah.
Like, the look and style and even shots. Like, it took what Abrams set up for new Star Trek.
No,
and it
looks
sleek and cool and, like, different, but I still have to see if that is a real place, a foothold in the culture.
Well, I hope it does, because everything they were talking about, like, they said they explore the humanity of Star Trek a little more in this one. You know, it's not gonna not acknowledge that the first two movies happened, but it's 2 years into their mission now. So they're kind of battle weary, they're kind of road weary actually, and you know, they've seen everything, or they think they have. And we're gonna get more relationship here. Like, they're gonna stay away from the Kirk and Spock thing, which is the main focus of the other two, making the other characters more peripheral than anything else. They're all going to be involved in here. There's going to be Spock and Bones hanging out, which is going to be wonderful because they're so good together. Like, those two did really well in those two movies together,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
As did Nimoy and McCoy before them.
Are BB-8 and Kylo Ren in it?
Forrest. Forrest Hill. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But those, man. But maybe all those, maybe all those little things that are friggin' tearing up the Enterprise are buzz droids. I don't know.
I guarantee you, this will. I will put money down.
Money.
Money where your mouth is. You don't have any money.
I have a few dollars in my pocket that, even if we really like the movie in 2 months' time, whenever it comes out, our complaint on this podcast, and that will be traveling around the internet, I guarantee, will be, we really liked it, but it's not a space movie. It made the world smaller, not larger, because as far as I can tell, the plot is they're surfing around, they're like, look at this, space, and then those Micronauts tear through their ship, and then they're on a planet with angry Idris Elba, and they have to get off, and then the end will be like, we got off!
And a motorcycle!
Right. Also, the other minor complaint will be like, Idris Elba, wasted! I guarantee you those will be the two things.
What? I mean, those is that ever not true?
Right, but those will be the two large geek talking points.
Well, what they're going to try to do, and they're going to try to succeed where X-Files failed, they're going to try to make a standalone movie that isn't connected to anything else. Nothing, no aliens or characters from the past. There's no Klingons in this movie.
Right.
Again, they're either really saving the Klingons or they just don't want to touch them.
I'm not saying that's inherently a bad thing. I'm just trying to explain,
and I think what it's going to trying to get to is why Star Trek is so successful, and that is the human element. Like, I mean, they talk about that all the time. I mean, friggin' Kirk says it when Spock dies, you know, his was the most human, even though to Spock that's an insult. But it's the human element, and this one's going to focus on that. The focus on the relationship and the chemistry between these leads. I mean, there's a reason you keep paying these actors a lot of money, and they're going to get more in the fourth movie. I think their deals are up after this, because usually deals are three pictures, right?
Yeah.
And if they want to make a fourth, you know. So I am going in here with cautious optimism for Star Trek, because I've loved Star Wars. I even liked Into Darkness, even though I understand some of people's complaints, and I hated that they had to keep lying about him being Khan, just like I hated them having to lie about Jon Snow being alive, but they had to do it. And wow, Kit Harington's apology was pretty adorable. Sorry? So, you know. But I don't know. Kyle, you've been silent through this Star Trek talk, and you just don't really have anything to say about it?
I really don't, unfortunately. I mean, I really liked the trailer. I feel a lot better about the movie than I did before.
I agree.
It still feels like there's going to be the weird stuff, like the motorcycle, I don't entirely understand.
You keep saying motorcycle. What are you talking about motorcycle?
There's a motorcycle in that trailer. He does a big jump on a motorcycle inexplicably.
Yeah.
Because
is it a motorcycle or like a space bike?
No, it sounds like a motorcycle.
Why is it a motorcycle?
I don't know. Why did they play the Beastie Boys?
Here's how that will make sense.
Well, it makes sense in the
first movie. Hold on, I figured it out.
Yes.
One, it pseudo makes sense that they'd have, it's a stretch, but it doesn't totally not make sense that he'd be listening to the Beastie Boys.
He was in an old 60s.
I'm not saying it but totally second, doesn't not make sense, it's fine.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is, when the ship gets torn apart, and they're just jettisoning random things away, mm-hmm. He's going to be poking around the planet. He's going to be like, well, what did we end up with? Oh, this thing that doesn't do anything. This doesn't do anything. And then McCoy will be like, and your bike.
God,
and he'll be like, oh, shit. Well, what we got to do with my old motorcycle on an alien planet besides sweet-ass jumps? That's going to be the give.
I forgot Kirk likes old two-wheeled vehicles.
He does because he drove a motorcycle around in the first one.
But, like,
I know.
Why does he need it on the ship?
Because he's old. Because this is like his it's attachment to home. It's like how Picard was like, "I'm pretending I'm on a ship." Like,
yes,
he likes old timey
but
shit.
He didn't keep like a mast a big fucking wheel in his quarters.
I'm not saying I approve
of it. He would go to the holodeck
and
Data would sing shit from HMS
Pinafore. I'm guessing that's how they're gonna get us.
Yeah,
there.
And I'm gonna be annoyed. I'll probably enjoy the rest of the movie. That's gonna be my like, I'm going in like, you better fucking do the motorcycle thing in a way that doesn't piss me off.
Right.
And if that's what I'm going in with, then it's going
to
be fine.
Justin Lin's directing, they had to have something that was Fast and Furious. What do you want them to do?
The Enterprise is fast enough. It goes warp 9.
Yeah.
It does. But
okay.
0.7.
Kind of sidebar.
Yes.
But even though it's going to be terrible, I will love it. I watched a clip from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows.
Oh, no.
And
that movie would be great. I don't know what you're talking
about.
They're
getting ready to, like, jump out of a plane, and Raph is nervous, and he goes, "What would Vin Diesel do?" And then he jumps out of the plane. And I'm like, this movie's going to be great.
I'm not worried about that at all.
The Turtles, the guys who are making the Turtles movies now know what they have, and they know what they're doing.
Yep.
It's just, it's, critics aren't going to like it, but the people who like Turtles and kids are going to like it.
Yeah.
So that's all
critics
that
don't need to like it. That's fine.
Let's talk about a saga that still has a place in our culture.
Well, hold on a second, because I want to go. I want to go back to Star Trek for a moment.
Okay,
but that get away from the movie.
Right, because
there's been the teaser, the horrible. I hate teaser culture. Teaser culture,
it's
shit.
Yeah.
So there was two teasers, but one of them was Star Trek.
Yeah. So Star Trek had a teaser, and then Beauty and the Beast had a teaser, which there's no point mentioning because there's maybe half a shot from the movie.
Yeah.
But we hear Ewan McGregor.
But only one of those makes McKellen. Sense to be doing.
Oh, okay. I don't know what you're going with that.
It totally makes sense to have the Beauty and the Beast teaser right now because they're dropping Alice in Wonderland this week. And the effect of that teaser is not for us, the people that knew that movie was coming. Imagine how you would feel if you were 7 or 8 and in the theater and that comes up and you go, holy shit, that's what that's for.
Why'd they show it on, yeah, I guess you're right. But why'd they show it on the internet beforehand?
Why'd they make it?
Well, first of all,
a 7-year-old's going to look at that and go, oh my god, that's awesome, best case scenario, and then completely forget about it for 6 months until the actual trailer comes out.
I don't know about when I was 6 or 7, but when I was 12 and I saw that Jurassic Park trailer that just showed the puddle moving and then we just heard the roar, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, so, that was before everything has a teaser that doesn't do anything.
I agree. No, I don't
just show
that.
Me the movie.
You know what I hate is, I hate the teaser to tease the teaser.
Yeah.
And they show you like 4 seconds of what they're going to show 30 seconds of tomorrow. It's
well, let's
stupid.
Go back to the Star Trek teaser.
Yeah, that's the one you want.
Star Trek teaser is
That's not even a teaser.
The Star Trek teaser is even worse.
It's a moving logo.
It's like somebody just discovered like Maya 3D or 3D Studio Max or whatever, and is like, look at this awesome spacescape I built. Look how it goes past this planet, and then it goes past this sun with solar flares flying out. How awesome is that? And then it ends on a shot, just says Star Trek. New stories, new ships, new heroes. I don't remember. It's pointless.
I think, completely pointless. I'm on the larger picture of, I think the series itself is pointless.
I disagree there. So
I 100% disagree with you.
With this series.
Star Trek belongs on TV.
I said this, I think, to Dan earlier today. With this television series, I hear something and I get more excited, and then I hear something and I get less excited. And I hear something and I get more excited, and I hear something and I get less excited.
Yeah. Brian Fuller, excited. Stupid teaser, not excited.
Right.
Anthology series, excited.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Set in the original timeline, less exciting, less awesome.
I thought it was in the middle of it. It's between original series and next generation.
Yeah, it's between original series and next generation, but it's in the original timeline, not the new timeline.
Oh, I understand.
It's supposed to be right after Undiscovered Country.
Like I was saying,
before next gen.
But he's talking about it's not in the Abrams timeline.
It's in the original timeline.
The Roddenberry timeline. But this is the thing, because I know this upsets you, but they keep going out of their way to let everybody know that other timeline still, because they didn't want to upset Star Trek fans, purists.
Right.
So that timeline still exists. This is just another one, kind of like Back to the Future when Doc Brown is doing the chalkboard thing where he's like, now we're skewed into this one, but this timeline still does exist. We just can't get there.
Yeah, but nobody cares about that timeline anymore.
Yes, there's a lot of Star Trek fans that do.
No, and that's fine.
It's the same kind of thing.
But that's what it is. That story has reached its end.
Not to some people. At least all those stupid fans that are, and I got in trouble for saying this, for all those fans that want the expanded universe to continue and be canon. It's like, no, you can't do that anymore. That's fine that it's Legends. It's not, and don't
but
make any
never
more
canon
books.
To begin with.
Because they wanted
it
to make more. Because EU
needs weird
canon. Well, these fans, these fans wanted to make
don't
more.
Don't use that. That stuff's horrible for you.
What are you talking about?
Antibacterial soap is terrible. Never use it. No, don't use it. Just use aloe. Don't use antibacterial soap. Trust me. I'll send you a link to the article later.
Anyway,
sorry.
Right.
I'm trying to save Josh's life here.
Interesting. I didn't know what you were
going
to say. I forgot what I was talking about, but go ahead.
Star Trek. yes, does belong on TV, but I think this is the wrong time to be doing this now because it's going to undermine what is already a semi-fledgling brand. Like, they're not in a position for it to succeed, and when it fails, it will pull down part of the whole thing with it.
Not necessarily, because, I mean, the show is more for the... Like, Enterprise didn't end with extremely low ratings. It just never got any better. Like, that, I mean, as far as ratings-wise. Like, the ratings stayed steady throughout the show.
Well, but it had bad ratings for its day.
Yeah, well, that because Star Trek needed to... that's what I'm saying. The ratings never declined. They just never rose to where they could justify spending the money they did. So what they're thinking here is that they're gonna bring the show back for those people that were still watching it. And hopefully bring in new fans because of the movies, but...
Their best bet, and this is where Star Trek succeeded when it was on in its heyday, you know, next gen especially, because that's what I grew up with. And then we got Deep Space Nine, Voyager. Star Trek has always been about humanity, exploring the boundaries of that, exploring the boundaries of science, how that impacts our humanity, and being topical in a way that reflects the day and age we live in. There are so many things happening in the world that are terrible, awful things that a new Star Trek series could explore. Yeah. I think it's the perfect time for a new Star Trek series to be on TV because we had that void where Star Trek kind of started to fizzle out, and then we got Stargate. And Stargate started to explore some of those same themes as Star Trek because you had a lot of the same people working on that show. And then
SG-1 is much better than Voyager and Enterprise.
I agree with you, but that show needs to be on one of the big three or on Showtime or on AMC or something where it can succeed and not in a world where the movie series, where the relaunch of the movies is already happening.
But the thing is, it's going to be online. It's not even going to be on regular TV.
I know, which is like...
I think that
works to its detriment.
So that the people who watched Star Wars 50 years ago, or Star Trek 50 years ago, can now go to CBS.com and watch it?
Well, they're all pretty nerdy, so I'm sure they're fine with a computer, using a computer nowadays. And then and a lot of the fans, like, there's still a generation of fans that have stuck to just that old stuff and don't even like the new movies. Well, so
my comparison is this, like... I'm pretty sure everybody at this table loved Community.
Oh, yeah.
I know I did. Mm-hmm. But when they put it on Yahoo screen, I was like, see you later. I think putting this show on, which Yahoo did the same thing. They're like, we're going to launch our service by putting Community on there. I think CBS is trying to be like, we're going to launch our CBS thing by putting Star Trek on there. I'm not going out of my way to watch that. I don't think, to Kyle's point, like, people that are in their 50s and 60s or older that love the original series like are going to necessarily go out of their way to find it. And the advantage they have is they won't come out on normal TV and then the next day get the ratings and be like, oh, they won't be in a ratings war, but they will be in a how much are we spending on this and how much are we actually getting out of like running Geico insurance ads on our website.
Right. And the thing you're throwing away making this original timeline and not the new timeline is when you're any dollar you spend advertising the movie, you're advertising the show. Any dollar you spend advertising the show, you're advertising the movie. You can use them to build off of each other. Now you can't really.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you can't take a minor character from the show, put him in the movie, or vice versa.
Well,
like, there's no...
Yeah.
There's no reason, if you love the movies, there's no reason to go watch this show.
Which is another reason.
Beyond just, hey, look, more Star Trek. But it's not that Star Trek, guys. Sorry, it's a different Star Trek. You know, it's
another reason why I think the franchise is a little hamstrung, because you can go back and read about how frustrated J.J. was when he was making the first two, especially the first one, that when they came to him, they're like, look, we want you to relaunch Star Trek. And he's like, well, I'm not much of a Star Trek guy, but blah, blah, blah. They're like, no, we want to be a giant thing in the culture again. And he was like, okay, well, here's the movie. And they're like, that's a great movie. He's like, okay, so what are we going to do for, like, branding? And they're like, nothing. They're like, because the Star Trek ownership is kind of, like, spread out. So even if they wanted to build out their empire, they're kind of cornered. Anyway, we've made Dan very sad.
No, I'm not sad. I'm just like every time you tell me this story about, you know, like people like JJ being upset with making Star Trek or whatever, And then, like, I hear the same thing about, you know, obviously Joss Whedon's even come out and said that he had a hard time in that second one, but then he tells things to what's his fuck? The guy who's director of Iron Man 3, Shane Black.
Yeah.
Which will lead to our next subject, by the way. He goes to Shane Black, and he tells Shane, he said, hey, man, just trust Kevin Feige, trust Marvel, they know what they're doing over there. Just tell your story, they'll make all the other parts fit.
Right.
So it's just like, all these contradictory reports, like, I don't know what to believe anymore.
Well, there's nothing contradictory about it.
Well, JJ said he had a great experience making Star Trek, but now I've never heard this, what you just said.
Right? No, that's a bit, there's a difference between the on-set experience and the business experience.
Well, yeah, the business experience is always going to suck. That's just
Like, Paramount.
But he was talking, about the marketing.
Right.
And the things around the movie.
That make it a thing.
Yeah.
That make it a cultural big event. Touchstone. And the Joss Whedon thing, he told Shane Black that when Shane Black was making Iron Man 3, which was right on the heels of Joss Whedon making $1 billion and having critical and huge success with the Avengers. He hadn't made Avengers 2 yet. He didn't start to butt heads with Marvel yet.
But at the same time, I think that these negative reports are exaggerated just because it's more fun. It's more fun to read negative stuff like that than it is the positive stuff. It's more fun to talk about. I don't know. I just think...
Well, maybe I'm not shitting on JJ or Star Trek.
I don't think you are
Paramount either, for not licensing things correctly.
Yeah.
Because that will always put Star Trek at a disadvantage. Think about it. When Star Trek relaunched, how many toys, T-shirts...
Right. Happy Meals.
Right. It's not there.
Pizza Huts.
It's not there because they don't have those licensing deals.
Because that's very true.
But Paramount owns, like, the movies, and CBS owns the TV. And that's another reason that you're not seeing the collusion that should be happening.
But I think the thing is also is Star Trek's never really been for kids. Like, it's not an adult story by any means, but, like, there's a reason why Star Wars toys are worth a shitload of money now, but the Star Trek toys that came out with Next Generation and obviously the old 60s toys are going to be worth money because they're from the 60s. But I have a bunch of the Star Trek Generation, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, the movie toys. They're not worth anything. Because kids didn't really buy them and don't really care. And most of the people that bought them were collectors and adults, and they're all still sealed. So everybody has 400 Worfs from Season 7 Next Generation because only adults buy their toys. So I think they were looking at that and thinking to themselves, oh, we're not really sell toys out of Star Trek. So I'm not saying that was the wrong thing to do or the right thing to do, but I can understand their thinking. It's like, why are we going to waste our money on that? Let's just see if he makes a good movie. And then after that, then they try to do it and then... Now that's what we're seeing now.
But it's not just the toys. Like when Star Wars came out, Force Awakens, you had like lipstick and makeup lines. You had car commercials. You had
everything.
Right. I'm not even talking I'm not talking about books and
no. I
don't. I'm not talking about the normal stuff. I'm saying they just every single company out there was doing a licensing deal.
Right.
And that is so much advertisement for the movie
that
something like Star Trek didn't even really try to do.
Just shows you the difference between Disney and Paramount. That's basically
what point. That's Abrams' point, I think.
Yeah. Right. Abrams was frustrated that they didn't put what he felt was like the full weight of their ability or power behind.
The way you market a blockbuster.
Franchise. Yeah, the way you market a blockbuster.
I'm just afraid that if Episode 8 comes out and it's more critically acclaimed and nobody has any complaints the way people... I hate their complaints about Force Awakens, about, oh, it's just a retelling of New Hope. Shut up. I hate all those complaints, but... What if Episode 8 comes out and just does gangbusters and story, like, critically wise, and, like, gets nominated for best screenplay, and then Abrams is like, well, they kind of hamstrung me because wasn't able to make the movie I wanted to make. Like,
I'm just
afraid something like that's going to happen, because it seems to happen all every time here now. It's like, we're all so excited
about
the
Abrams hasn't...
Yeah, there's no context for that.
Yeah.
Like, before Ultron even came out, Joss Whedon was saying, like, this one was tougher, this one was harder. After this, I'm taking a big break. Like, there was things that pointed at, like, this was a bit more of a struggle than the first one was.
Yeah.
Well, especially... Okay, so look. The big thing to me with Avengers and Age of Ultron is Avengers was the culmination of something.
Right.
Age of Ultron was setting something else up. And not just one other thing, but five other things.
Right. I agree.
And that's the stakes of it were way higher because the first one did $1.5 billion.
I really like Age of Ultron.
It culminated into that, I'm not.
This is I know.
This is me just saying, like, the reason that there is that headbutting is because Joss Whedon wants to make the best movie. And he wants to make his movie.
And I love Joss.
With Avengers, they were on the same page with Avengers. Yeah. It was the culmination of something. They didn't need to set up something else.
Right.
The events of that movie naturally, you know, the fact that it happened in New York set up what came after.
Right.
Whereas Age of Ultron had to sort of... The events that happened in whatever the country was...
Sokovia.
Yeah. Set up Civil War, but they're also trying to set up, what's his name?
Black Panther.
Vision. Black Panther. The Black Panther.
Claw's in there. Vision. Wakanda's in there. Vision's in there. Scarlet Witch.
Yeah. All of these things. And Thor. Thor setup was sort of ham-fisted. I'm not talking about Civil War. Civil War handled the new characters great. Okay.
No, I'm sure. But I mean, they did set up Wakanda in Age of Ultron.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So from a... You're right.
Claw.
I forgot about that. Yeah. From a business perspective... That movie had all of these things it had to do and set up and prepare for the next one. From a artistic filmmaking standpoint, Joss Whedon just wanted to make a fucking movie. Yeah. You know, I don't think he wanted to make I'm making this movie, but I'm also making a prologue to Thor, and then I need to set things up for Civil War, and then I need to make sure that that whole action sequence that's mostly unnecessary to set up Black Panther and its universe is... has to be there, and then...
That's interesting. Although I'll try and put, like, a bow on this, if I can, which is, like... And I think that's the problem with, like, no matter how good Star Trek Beyond is, and I actually think I'm really going to enjoy it and be a defender of it, like, there was a perfect reason for Avengers to be, and a satisfying reason, and there's a perfect reason for The Force Awakens and Episode 8 to be. There's a story, there's a through line happening, and that's really satisfying. There's not really... Ultimately, especially if Star Trek Beyond is like a bottle episode of a franchise, like it will be disposable in the way that Ultron, for as fun as it is kind of disposable because there's no real reason for that story to be happening at that time. You know, there's not a culmination. There's not.
I wouldn't
a
say that.
It
sets up the emotional journey that Tony Stark's on that culminates in Civil War.
Yeah, but again, that's like. There wasn't anything building to Age of Ultron, is what I'm saying. And, like, that's what will happen, that's what could happen in Beyond, where the normal populace will go see it and be like, okay, that was fun, but it won't have the cultural stamp that Paramount really wants, not just because it's Star Trek, but because Paramount is devoid of franchises right now. That's why we're getting Transformers 5. And a Transformers 6.
Well, it's because people keep going to see these movies. That's why... But I'll finish off your bow. I'll tie it. I'll put my finger down, and we'll finish it right now. But the only reason I was going to say that Ultron was it was Tony's journey. It seemed almost like all these movies are Tony's journey because with Iron Man 3, he had all those robots, all the suits protecting him, and then he talks about even though like I didn't do those right. Now these whatever Ultron, not Ultron. What are the robots called in the beginning of the movie? I can't even remember. You remember what they're called?
Well,
they're not called Ultron, but it's the security force.
Yeah, Star Security Force or something like that.
So, I mean, and then it goes all the way to the point where, okay, because Tony starts from Iron Man 2 saying, hey, you're not going to control me, government. Like, this is, I am Iron Man. It's not a weapon, it's me. And then to where, obviously, he's supporting these.
No, I get that. I'm not saying there's not a plot there. I'm just saying.
I think it's good. I understand what you're saying.
But I mean, that's the thing about Ultron.
But that's the thing is, all I'm saying is, I don't want people to throw away Ultron. Like, I want all these movies, with the exception, and I will maintain this, even though I like the movie, with the exception of the Incredible Hulk, are important to the overall with the MCU story. Like, it's we are watching episodic television.
Like,
on the
there's program. A natural timing to Avengers 1 and Civil War. It's natural stakes that aren't there for Ultron. Like, Ultron happened because they had to release a movie that there was a sequel to it.
I don't know that I 100% agree. After having, you know, talked about Ultron. All
right, Kyle just opened the box again.
Yeah. Sorry.
Damn.
No, it's okay. Let's do it.
I feel like Tony's reaction to creating this artificial intelligence after what happened before is a natural one. I feel like that worked. His creation of Ultron accidentally worked. For me, it's the other stuff. It's the Thor going down to the underwater pool and having weird
and
visions.
I was gonna say that.
It's that side stuff that doesn't work for
me. I mean,
me.
the only thing that makes the movie drag. I understand where they thought they were being clever there, though, because they wanted to show off Scarlet Witch's powers of being able to manipulate your reality.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of... I understand where they thought, oh, man, that was so clever. We're going to pat ourselves on the back for that one. But
I don't think it's as bad as people say it.
No, but it's just like the stuff you had in BVS. It's just, if you already don't know the story, like, let's say we do, most audiences go, what the fuck was that? You know, and I get that sentiment. I totally get
it. And I'm saying, like, the whole journey with Tony in those movies and in that movie makes total sense to me. I'm just saying that, like, by the time you got to Avengers, you felt like you had been building there. There wasn't anything in Phase 2 that was like, Ultron's are coming.
Yeah.
Right, hold on to your butts. Yeah. It was more like the start of something than the end. Yeah. Or a middle piece. It wasn't that big. Whereas Civil War is really the big culmination of that second phase.
Yeah.
Not Ultron, which... is maybe, you know, maybe it's not fair that Ultron was an Avengers movie. Maybe Civil War should have been Avengers, and Ultron should have been
like Iron Man 4,
a smaller, like, Tony Cap, somebody else. Yeah, like an Iron Man 4. I don't know.
All right.
Maybe we just solved the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I don't know. Because you don't really need Thor in that movie. You can lose Thor from Ultron and be okay.
Yeah. You don't get the cool little moments that don't really matter, like when him and Tony are comparing girlfriends. Yeah. Well, apparently they broke up with both of them because Pepper Potts obviously isn't in Civil War, because they say they're on the outs.
They're on a break,
and then Natalie Portman's not going to be in Thor Ragnarok, and Tessa Thompson apparently is the love interest in this one.
Although, okay, so there's one.
Natalie Portman doesn't belong in Thor Ragnarok.
There's like one. I mean, there's some good plot reasons that you have to have Thor there because he brings Vision to life, blah, blah, blah. But the one main reason
that was pretty cool scene.
To have Thor in that movie, more so even than the party scene where they're all trying to lift the hammer, is the moment where Vision is born.
I'm going to watch 8 Ultron tonight.
The moment where Vision's born and you go, what the fuck is this? What is this character? Can we trust him? And they go like, well, are you a bad guy? He's like... oh, no, but if we're going to stop Ultron, we should get going. And he just picks up the hammer and hands it to Thor. And you go, wow, I trust this thing.
Yeah. It's a good moment.
Yeah,
I don't disagree.
Anywhere.
But, I mean, you could still have it. Like, there's you just have a throwaway line from Tony. Yeah, Thor left it here. He's going to let me check it out. Because he knows I won't find anything from it. I mean, it's not an elegant solution.
Anyway,
but
no.
Join us next year, or two years from now, when we do an hour-long pod on Civil War.
I want to slide back to Star Trek for 2 seconds.
No.
Just a simple question.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Because I was leading somewhere when we were talking about Iron Man 3, and I know you guys know where I was going.
I don't know if I. Oh, but yes,
gotta,
I do.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. We're gonna. So, we won't talk about too much.
Just really quick, because we talked briefly about sort of the lack of continuity through the Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
That they're all standalone thus far.
Right.
Yeah.
How would you guys feel if this movie, or even the second movie, if we just ignored the con movies? He did the first movie to set up the universe, and then 2 and 3, or 2, 3, and 4, or in this point, I guess 4, 5, and 6, was like a 3-part. Movie series, like a trilogy of movies about a war between the Federation and the Klingon Empire.
I would absolutely fucking love that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think if the reason they're not showing the Klingons is they want to save them for something big, you got to make it huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you start because the first movie with a surprise attack, and then the third movie is actually kind of undiscovered country, where there's going to be peace talks, and the Enterprise is escorting...
Yeah.
Their person, and there's assassination attempts, and things go crazy. Like, you can kind of...
Yeah.
It's...
Because, like, the stakes were massive in the first movie when you had the one Romulan ship threatening the entire Federation. I mean, that's...
basically.
And then, in the second one, the stakes were pretty high because you had the most superior being ever to be born about to take over the Federation. And then this one, a little smaller. It doesn't seem like they're threatening the world, they're just threatening the Enterprise, which is kind of cool. That's I think I like that.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. You know, not everyone has to be a galaxy-threatening...
I mean, come on,
but,
it will be.
But.
It will be. The third one ultimately will be.
I don't know, man. Like, I really think it's just contained. Destroying the Enterprise is
their plan.
Thing.
Is it's going to end up being the Borg?
No, it's not going to be the Borg. It's not going to be.
It's totally going to be the Borg. No, I'm just going to call it
that
right now. It's
going
to be the Borg.
It's not the Borg. It's
no,
not the Borg.
That could be kind of interesting.
If you incorporate the Borg, hey, do not fight me on this, guys. Resistance is futile.
Yeah, you just wanted to say that. I love it. I love it. Please, if Locutus is part of it, that'd be badass. They've already do time travel, and let's do it again.
Okay,
let's bring Patrick.
So, sorry. Okay, we can move on.
But
now.
I would love. After Dan's time. I was just gonna say, I would love, because I'll tell you this right now. I'm gonna come out right now. My favorite Star Trek series is Deep Space Nine. I started watching it again, and there was this episode they had with Jake going back and going into the future and talking about his. Oh my god, it was so fucking beautiful. I can't even explain. I don't want to get into that part. But Deep Space Nine had such an awesome arc from season 4 through 7, and it was all about the Dominion Federation War.
Yeah.
And if you were able to do a trilogy of movies that just focused on the Klingons and the Federation facing off, it would be beautiful.
Where I'm going to show how nerdy I am or am not. The Federation and the Klingons were at war. They got to peace at the Kittimer Accords.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
You were right.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay, thank
that
you.
Was correct. That was Undiscovered Country, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Well, that was, yeah, that was...
that's the planet that grew up? That's the planet that blew up?
Well, no, it was...
was it Kittimer Accords from Next Generation?
No, Kittimer Accords happened... that's Undiscovered Country, because Praxis is the moon that blows up. The
Praxis,
energy production.
Yeah.
Chernobyl.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that could work out really well, and they were already kind of dwindling down anyway as far as outright fighting and battling. I mean, they have the neutral zone in between them, but
if you guys keep talking about Star Trek, I'm gonna give you all wedgies and then go to the football game.
Well, it shows how much of a nerd you are. It's not even football season.
God.
But anyway, all right, let's just finish. The only thing I wanted to
what's wrong with the feet?
I wanted to end off one thing, and we don't have to get too deep into this But the three of us saw a fantastic movie, Josh, Kyle, and myself. Josh Moorhead, Kyle, and myself. And it was directed by Iron Man 3, Shane Black. Written and directed. Man, can this guy make a movie? Because The Nice Guys was fantastic.
Absolutely.
It was so entertaining from start to finish. It's a throwback to a movie that does not exist anymore. And I'm not saying it has to come back in full force. But if they made a couple more of these just to have Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling together again. Even if they make different movies, those men have such great chemistry.
Fantastic chemistry.
And I know it's not going to get nominated for Oscars, but Ryan Gosling at least deserves a nomination for Golden Globe.
That movie
he's so good.
That
movie
was off the walls, fantastic, and just surprising and delightful at every turn. And unfortunately, it's going to get what? Like, we live in peak media, like we talk about sometimes. It's almost not fair that my weekend started with seeing that movie and then ending on the Game of Thrones episode I got. Like, or we all got.
Yeah.
Like, that movie's got to be forgotten in 6 days, less than, when Apocalypse and Through the Looking Glass, and then when the rest of summer happens. But I guarantee you, in 20 years, when we're all still here, and they show, like, their old screenings at Egyptian and stuff, it'll be like...
Sold out.
Come out, we're showing The Nice Guys tonight, and Ryan Gosling and Shane Black are like an 80-year-old Russell Crowe going to talk about his experience, and theater will be packed. But if some other theater was like, we're showing Through the Looking Glass, I'll be like, Through the what?
Like, it'll be stoners. Stoners will show up, get high.
Original Alice. This movie's cartoon. Not going to make the money that it deserves, but it's going to live forever.
Although, I read an article where it said it did better than expected.
Well, it was not tracking super well. It came out against an R-rated comedy.
Neighbors 2.
The only way $11 million is more than expected is if you release, like, The Witch on 600 theaters, even less than that. Like, this wide release with those stars attached and to be fair, the marketing push that Warner Brothers really put behind it, $11 million, if I was a studio executive on this lot today, I would have been like, that's unacceptable. I would have been like, I'm not mad because we took a chance and it's a great movie, but it's...
Well, that's exactly, you just said it right there, they should have released this movie in August. It's stupid to release it in May, right up against all these movies.
Well, there's
Civil
War
is even still out there.
Because I think
but
this
it
movie's
have word
got,
of mouth.
I think this movie's got a shot at having legs. Yeah. I think the word of mouth is going to be very good. I think everybody who saw it probably loved
it. Hopefully the 12 people listening now will see it.
I was excited when the trailer came out.
And
I will go see it.
They'll have legs, but it won't, like, there's no such thing as, like, a 8% drop. Like, it'll go to, like, 6 million this weekend, or 7.
Yeah, but it can stay around there. Like, I think it can, if it stays in the high single digits for the next 2 months,
they'll still be, it'll still top out at, like, 50, which is still, like,
yeah, but that's not bad for this movie. This movie didn't cost much.
Well, it's bad for this movie. It wouldn't have been bad for this movie if it was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and it was made, like, for a nickel. But they had more money in this. Like, I think it was a $50 or $60 million production. So they might recoup their costs, especially, like, worldwide. But what I'm trying to say is the sad thing is we're not getting a franchise out of this that I would have loved to have seen. Unless DVD sales and everything else.
And I think that's it. And not even digital sales, really.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But the thing is, one, I think it has legs. Two, I feel like this is the kind of movie that you need to do a smaller release. You know, you do 20 theaters and get high grosses in those 20 theaters. You do New York, you do L.A., you do a couple big markets.
Well, I mean, it's already shot in the foot, then. It's
no, right. I'm not saying you can do that now. I'm saying that's the way you release a movie like that, especially when you're going up against Neighbors 2 and apparently the very strong, unexpected Angry Birds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you release this small, you expand small. You know, you do it like... You do it like an independent film. You know, you market it that way. You have these screenings. You make it more of an event instead of a, you know, it's an insider event as opposed to a, hey, everybody come see this movie, because this isn't that kind of movie.
Anyway, it's beautiful and amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
Go see it.
It's very much worth it. And if you need somebody to go with you, I will go see it.
Yeah, we'll go. I'll go.
Yeah, I will definitely see it again.
Like, I'm already behind this summer because I need to see Civil War again.
I also want to see Neighbors too, and I kind of want to see Angry Birds movies.
I kind of want to see Angry Birds too. Yeah, yep.
Can we all go see it together as a guilty pleasure?
Yeah,
that'd be a good idea. Maybe after next week's pod.
It was written by one of the original Simpsons writers cast. It's got Jason Sudeikis
versus Bill Hader. I mean, I'd see them do anything.
Honestly,
together,
the animation's pretty beautiful.
I watch gay porn with them.
Wow, Dan's putting that on the table.
Yeah, it looks like gay porn. It looks like the best case scenario for something called the Angry Birds movie. But anyway, yeah.
Well, what makes me upset, though, and we'll end right here, but apparently the success of the Angry Birds movies, we're starting to see, although I don't see it that big of a success. Only $30 million. That's not huge.
40.
40?
And to the point of
Lakes. Neighbors made like 30, maybe like half of what it made before.
Right.
That's what it was. I'm sorry. So you're right. So hearing that, now a bunch of these mobile games are getting greenlit. Apparently Fruit Ninja is going to get a movie. And I mentioned this to Kyle earlier, and he kind of had a funny idea. He's like, well, if it's this, and I can't remember what you said, but
It is aliens that come down to Earth in the form of human fruit and can only be killed by this secluded group of ninjas who has been waiting for this very thing to happen again, because it has happened before.
Yeah.
And they have their magic ninja fruit slicing swords, and they're the only thing that can save us. I'd watch that movie.
I think it's going to be something like that, because the article I read said that it's a live action, whatever, CG hybrid, which means that it will be some kind of like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, like only one ninja can save us from the food war type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Ooh. Oh boy. Or, in the worst scientific movie ever, GMO crops come to life and fight back against the people who are eating them.
Oh.
I'm
pro-GMO, by the way. I just want to say that.
That's maybe an interesting thought, though.
I don't want to force us into a close, but...
I want to hear you and RJ talk. Josh wants to go home.
I want to eat, but
have the rest of my burrito.
No. I think this is. I'm not inherently offended by the idea of these movies. Like, the emoticon movie offends me because it just sounds bad. But I like reverse.
But a Star Trek TV series offends you?
No, sorry. Yeah, but like, but no. I'm gonna say why, and then I'm gonna lay down a challenge for us. Like. Even from when I was a kid, I liked, because I loved movies so much, and then it used to be that when something was a movie, that meant it was the biggest version of it. Like, when the Flintstones movie was coming out, I was like, this is peak Flintstones. Like, that's what I thought you were getting when I was a kid. So, I liked reverse engineering things. Like, what would Laundry the movie be? So, I like thinking of these things as, like, thought exercises. Like, we're going to make an Angry Birds movie. Well, what the fuck would that be? What is Fruit Ninja? So, I think our challenge for next week, since we don't have a reboot ready.
I do not have to reboot it, no.
Which is fine. It took me a month online.
I do have one character cast, and I think you guys are going to love it.
We should, like, I want to think of a thing real quick off the top of my head that we could all come up with our version of a movie.
Well, I just want to say,
to Star Trek.
No, the movie. The thing you're talking about.
I would make Star Trek.
Do you make this a movie with a story and all that stuff? I thought, and I know it got panned, I enjoyed it, Battleship. Like, Battleship had, it was an interesting idea.
Did it need to be
themed to the movie? No.
But if we're going to go with Taylor Kitsch movies, I like John Carter.
Fascinating thought experiment, but I watched it on a plane and I wasn't on board, so to speak.
I mean, it's not a great movie, but that's an interesting way to, like, and to then do in that the end,
board game.
In the end, when they figure out, like, oh, how are we going to shoot the, oh, wait, they're going to hit buoys as they're, like, swimming away from us. Okay, fire a buoy B7. Like, it kind
of
works.
Right, okay, so, like, reverse
the gimmick
engineering
was clever, the rest of the movie was not.
Yeah.
Reverse engineering.
It's like a bad Independence Day.
As a thought exercise, I'm looking at apps on my phone. Okay. Well, I don't know. Candy Crush the movie.
Shut up.
That's our assignment. Got it. Well, don't say it now. We'll save it for next time.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Candy Crush the movie. We can do that.
We'll all come up with our log lines, and then we'll see who comes up with the best Candy Crush.
All
right, Kyle has his apparently.
Yeah, I'm already done.
Okay,
but the only problem with this game is I Angry Birds was the last mobile game I played, and I haven't played one. Like, I tried that. What's that one that Jacob always plays with the little armies?
Clash of Clans.
Yes, I tried that.
Has an inbuilt like story though.
It does.
Like,
I don't even play the Star Wars games.
Candy Crush is Tetris, bro. So just and they're making
we talking about
they're
making a Tetris
movie. So anyway,
so back to my whole Mike Robert Zemeckis making the Pong movie with Michael J. Fox as the ball. All right, we're going to end it right there, everybody. So why don't you outro us there, Potter?
All right, well, this has been another edition of The Way We Hodor. I'm Hodor. To the right of me is...
Hodor.
That's Josh Moorhead.
Across from him...
Hodor.
That's Kyle Bound.
And next to him...
Hodor. I'm Daniel Villalobos.
See you guys later.
That was Josh Potter.
Hodor. Hodor.
Thanks for listening. If you want more from the nerds, check us out on the intertubes at thewaywenerd.com. And if you haven't already, you should follow us on Facebook and Twitter at thewaywenerd, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, this is The Way We Nerd.